This is the Galaxy Wars podcast with your host, The Grays. Greetings, welcome back to another episode of the Galaxy Wars podcast with Jim and Tom. And this episode is all about The Boys. It's we're going to talk Amazon Prime's hit series, second season, first three episodes of The Boys with Carl Urban, Jack Quaid, Anthony Starr, Karen Fukuhara, so many other people that we'll talk about throughout this episode. But before we get into that, since it's an Amazon episode, I'd like to talk about a recent casting to a series that will be hitting Amazon soon, Jack Reacher.
You love Jack Reacher.
Jack Reacher's not bad. I could do a little bit without some of Tom Cruise's antics, but as far as a badass spy and, you know, badass lead character, I liked it. But this series is going to be what I'm thinking is similar to what they do with Jack Ryan, and how they took Jim from The Office, John Krasinski, and made him because Benghazi kind of made him a badass, but this kind of re-ups his badassery.
Right. It got him. The good that came of this, it's a good show, from what I understand. I actually have never seen it, but everybody tells me it's good. And I do like what he's doing, you know. But the good that comes of this is he gets closer and closer every season to being a superhero. And that superhero is...
Mr. Fantastic?
Mr. Fantastic. And I've been reading and catching up on a lot of the new Marvel right now, and the state of the, you know, the incursions and stuff like that got me like thinking how deep they can go into the fantastic stories if they really, really, really wanted to. But we'll see. They got 20 years of stories there.
Yeah, and there's a ton of stuff there. And like, they could start with the origin story, which we hope for, at least I hope for, but they could just jump to the future and have Franklin in there, and it could resonate with the children and kid viewers. Right. The options are endless.
Right.
Have you started reading Empire yet?
No.
New crossover?
No, it not just, yet.
I believe it's ending. I've started so many comics and I haven't had enough time to read them all, but I'm probably going to finish it this week, maybe tomorrow because it's Labor Day, but I'm really looking forward to seeing where they go with that. And Fantastic Four is huge in it, especially the kids. But you kind of segued right into what I wanted to say. Jack Ryan gets you to John Krasinski turning into a superhero. Jack Reacher has casted a superhero, a two-time superhero, but a TV superhero. So they casted Alan Ritchson.
Okay.
From he was Aquaman in Smallville, and he plays Hawk on Titans.
Oh, does he really? Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. Okay. I do know that. Yep.
So, like, he's got the Jack Reacher in the books is about 6'5", 250. But he's super cut. Like, I'm 6'5", 240, but I'm nowhere near what Jack Reacher's supposed to be. But Alan Ritchson is probably 6'2", 220, and he's a pretty beefy dude. So, I think they did a really good casting with that.
Yeah, even too. He is a bigger guy. He might even slim down a little bit. But you know, when they get him in those suits and stuff, it's like hard to tell. You know, they get him in those slim fit and suits, and it's hard to tell like what their body type is. That's weird to say, but you know, who knows how that's going to work out. It's a good pick, though. Yeah, I do. I do think. He's got a little bit of a Hemsworth look to him. I think he's going to do good.
Yeah, so do I. I'm pretty optimistic about this, and I know Amazon really does a good job assembling their cast, and they really have, to my liking, I don't think that they've failed on a series yet.
I can't think of any. No.
I mean, know they canceled The Tick two seasons in with full potential for a third, but I get that's not hitting for them, but everything else we've watched is really good. Even we talked highly about Robbie Amell's show, who going into it, we didn't think was going to be great.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be great.
Yeah, they've turned me on to a lot more stuff than I thought that I cared about. You know what I mean? Like Robbie Amell show. What is it called? Download
Upgrade.
It? Upgrade.
Or upload.
Upload it? Upload. God, we were close. Yep. but no, I and you're not even a Robbie Amell fan, so that's what's crazy about that. So,
yeah, I dove right into it.
Yeah, but the premise is great, so it's not too surprising. Yeah, it's turning me on to a ton of stuff. I mean, I knew that way back when the Grand Tour went to it, I knew that I was stuck. And then the Expanse gets on there, and I'm like, all right, well, I hope those two shows are, well, the Grand Tour is renamed, but it's basically a reimagining of a show that I really liked. So it's them giving a show a chance or another chance, which I like. And maybe that's where they started. I mean, they had a lot of shows on there before. And, what's that show with Idris, what's the show with Idris Elba where he's a cop?
Luther?
Yeah, that was one there. That's where I saw Luther.
They had Man in the High Tower.
That's like their first one. That's their first like strictly Amazon property. And
yeah.
So everything that you're right. Everything they do is kind of a winner. So they haven't screwed up yet.
It's fair to say that Amazon is winning the streaming wars. That I guess if you categorize them as streaming wars, they're winning. And I know you and I had kind of talked about doing an episode once HBO Max came out, and it's out. So maybe during the second wave of COVID, we can do that. But with that, it brings good news because especially for us, I know it's happening all over the country, but in New Jersey, movie theaters are about to start opening.
Yeah,
which it speaks volumes to our content because now we can finally go back into the theaters and review movies. We've done, our listeners will know, we've done a lot of streaming stuff and stuff that was VOD, but nothing theater. We haven't been to a theater since March. I think Bloodshot was the last time I was in a theater.
Oh boy, yeah. Well, that's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to make up for that.
And the movie before that was Birds of Prey.
Yeah, so. I went to Birds of Prey. I think I went to Birds of Prey with Banks. Yeah, it's been a while, and I don't know what we're gonna see. I mean, I don't know what there is. That's
well, right just now
where we're
we
at.
We have Tenet.
Oh yeah, Tenet.
Tenet premiered this week. New Mutants is still trying to keep a heartbeat going. We got Wonder Woman 1984 coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Dune. So. Yeah. We've got some stuff. We got at least one movie per month.
True.
I mean, if everything goes according to plan.
Yeah, I think Tenet's going to be my first big one.
I agree.
They're telling us...
There's something about a Nolan movie that you have to see it in theaters.
Yeah. It's not a single watch type of thing, which is fine, whatever. I mean, we'll try to make any sense that we can of it. Which doesn't mean we'll be able to do it, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, listen, didn't we do Us? And we talked about that for the whole year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I still have theories on Us, and I don't think I'm ever going to get answers. So, Tenet will be a fun ride for when we do it. Maybe next week, maybe the following week, but I think this month we'll definitely do Tenet. But, Let's go into the boys. Let's talk to the boys.
All right.
Season one came and went about 2 years ago. Immediately came. As I watched it, I was like, this is a series for me. And it follows kind of like the same tones as Preacher because it's a Seth Rogen-produced joint. And we got first, you know, it is. I think I'm a little tainted because I like binging. I think I'm spoiled.
Right, yeah.
Because... I want to binge an episode. I want to binge the season. And Umbrella Academy came. I watched it in a weekend. Cursed, I watched in a weekend. All this stuff, Lucifer, season five, part one, came, watched it in a weekend. This one, three episodes, and now it's episodic.
Yeah, and we've been getting a lot of that, three episodes. And well, this is, Amazon has always done episodic. They're not bingeable, but...
No, they were.
Yeah, it sucks. No, they've always done episodic.
Upload was bingeable.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that The Expanse was episodic.
And The Tick was bingeable, too.
Okay. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how they come to that conclusion.
But, and season one was bingeable for The Boys.
Was it?
Yep.
Well, I wonder if it's a production, how much production they had finished, you know?
Yeah.
They only had three episodes, 100%. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how that worked out for them, but it is weird to have to wait for something. You're right. Like, it sucks. Like, I'm so privileged, and I'm such a, you know, I'm a...
Prima donna?
Yeah, when it comes to that. Like, oh, I can't believe I gotta wait. Like it's 1958, and I have to wait for an episode a week.
Yeah.
But it is what it is.
At first, when they announced it, I was like, oh, my God. You know, it was... I think it was in the early summer. I was like, what am I going to do? Mandalorian's coming back. All my other shows are going to come back. And then, like, slowly, because of COVID, everything started getting pushed back. So all the CW stuff's not coming out until 2021. And it seems like the only show that is going to run parallel to The Boys episodically is Swamp Thing. And I already saw that. And it's not going anywhere because it was canceled. So it's just they're just showing the encore on CW. So with this, I was like, you know what? This is kind of welcomed. It gives me something to look forward to. During COVID, if people had to quarantine, and I quarantined but I was furloughed for 6 months, I lost all sense of routine.
Right.
Like even my sleep routine was kind of messed up, and my work routine, obviously I wasn't working. So it was a lot of just streaming content, working on podcasts, working on the interviews and Instagrams. And now it's, you know, I'm back to work and I'm like, all right, you know what? I can unwind and I can watch this episode. And I, you know, we were gifted three episodes early. I think it came out early Thursday night. And I watched it Friday. And I was like, you know what? This picks up right where I left off. There's a reason why I like this. I love this series.
Literally hours later. I mean...
Yeah, and it's you know, 98% on Rotten Tomatoes for season two. For a TV show, I guess like for a mature-rated TV show of that caliber for The Boys, which is kind of, if you read the comics, they're super controversial. They're full of hate. They're full of sexism, racism. It's not not for the faint of heart. And what we're getting in the series is...
I think we've talked about this before. With other stuff, but in this, there's no, like, okay, spoilers for anything. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. There's no happy ending. These are bad people. Everybody's a bad person, and they continue to get worse and worse and worse. The good guys are bad people. Butcher isn't a horrible person, but he's playing a game and he's using everybody as pawns in the comics and in the TV show. But Butcher's, you know, Carl Urban's so good at playing Butcher that I don't care. Like he's still one of my favorite characters. But when all said and done about this in the comics and this, I mean, they're playing it a little like, they've changed it enough where they can keep even like you as a me and you as like people who've read the entire series and know the supposed end, or know how this all works out, kind of on our seats because I mean look at just the way they play Stormfront, how much different she is. I mean they did a gender swap on her, or on the character, so they change enough where they go. Are they going to try to make her a sympathetic character or a heroic character? And they're like, no, they're not going to do that. Of course they're not going to do that. But they do keep you, like, really engaged, and they trick you so many times to say, yeah, it might work out. It might, there might be a happy ending. And then you're like, nope, everybody still sucks, and everybody's, like... What we were saying earlier is the only bright side to all this, and it sucks to say that he's a bright side, is, well, he's a fantastic actor, but is the guy that owns the corporation.
Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah, he actually takes everybody down a peg, all the supers. So it's good to see him, like, throw out some clout. But this show, yeah, this show is not for, like, the Marvel Universe watchers, and that's your only watching or superhero extent. This is a deeper story, a little bit darker, a lot of bit darker, and kind of angry and mean and, you know, anti-corporation sort of. But, you know, that's what makes it so good.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like what would happen if Warner Brothers owned DC Comics. You know, that's what. It's what you're getting. You're getting a conglomerate running superheroes, and the superheroes are a business. The Seven are a business, and they could be fired, and they could be rehired, and they could be transferred, and they could, you know, they can form unions and whatever. Yeah. This is a show that makes you fall in love with characters that you are supposed to hate.
Mm-hmm. Right. 100%.
Like, for example, my favorite character on the show is Homelander. And I think it's because they just, like, everything about Homelander is very Superman-like. But, like, if Superman went on a meth binge. You know what I mean? And yeah. And he wasn't like Clark Kent. He didn't have his values. But Homelander is, like, everybody's a parody. So you're seeing, like, how flawed these characters are. And you see how Homelander's no BS. Like, he'll tell you what it is. He's weird. And I think maybe I like Homelander is because I like Anthony Starr. I think he's a great actor.
Yeah, there's no way that he plays this character and doesn't go home and like not have to take a shower or like read or get this out of his brain somehow, because Homelander's not only is he like dark, he's not even really like he's not dark at all, really. He's just mean and entitled and just creepy, like super creepy, and it like he's always getting creepier and he's always getting more entitled each and every episode. And he's not this isn't a dark show. Like, it's got dark themes, but it's not like nobody's dark. It's everything that they do is they shine a spotlight on it. I mean, they do like hide it, but every time that something happens, every time something bad happens, it's just buried. It's buried in spin. So they, you know, it's kind of I just don't see it as like a dark and gritty and, you know, dirty. It's none of those things. I mean, it's got its moments, but it's more like a bright horror show. Like they want you to see it almost.
It's kind of like the saying, don't ever meet your heroes. Like,
right.
The Boys' tagline should be, what if superheroes are assholes? Because they are. Every one of them is. Even for, to an extent, Starlight this season is becoming an asshole. You're seeing that she's playing the game more.
Yeah.
Exactly. And she's extorting people. She extorted Gecko, who she was friends with, and, you know, but she's understanding how she's being played. She's realizing that she was tested on. She's created. Everybody that a superhero is created, and we're going to jump to episode 3 like we normally do. And she, along with Huey, out compound V, which is like the biggest moment in the series,
right,
so far. So you're getting to a point where, you know, Disney is now being said to have created the Marvel heroes, essentially. They're saying Disney is responsible for Captain America, where Vault is now responsible for Homelander and for A-Train and for Popclaw from season 1 and all these characters. And there's, you know, there's terrorists going on too. So is Vault responsible for them as well? Is this all just a big game, corporation game to make superheroes need it, make them militarized, make them movies? So you're seeing a lot of how it breaks the dichotomy of the superhero genre and the superhero business.
It's like, it's like when Amazon eventually does take over the entire planet and they do like
Prime Lad
create superhero. Yeah, they create their own superheroes and create their own problems and create their own terrorists just to send somebody else out and be a fixer. So although it is a superhero show and people have superpowers, there is, everything that happens is very relatable outside of the superpowers. But the superpowers, like, they don't play as big a part as you think they would. Power is just a stand-in word for anything. You could just say Homelander has more power than this person. And it could be, if you took it out of this genre and put it into a mafia show, you would say, well, Homelander has more clout with the boss than Starlight or anybody else.
And, yeah.
Or, you know, Black politically. Noir. Yeah. Anywhere you put it, it's just about power. It's not necessarily about superpower. It's just how much power does this person have? And in this, they're superpowers, so it's easier, you know, in the climate that we're in and the amount of, you know, superpowered stuff that we watch. But it has very little to do with superpowers. It's more about the drama that's created through the power struggles. And they do a great story. They do as good a story as anything I've seen about crime dramas and power. And I get the same feeling from this show. And I know this, like, than The Wire, you know, like, and I think The Wire is one of the greatest written shows of all time. But how, like, every time I get happy for a thing that happens, I know that eventually they're going to take it away from me. They're going to take my toy away. Yep. And The Wire did it every season. They did it with every character. Every good thing that happened to McNulty, eventually he was going to fall off the wagon. And, you know, they killed what's-his-name at the very end. That little kid shot at the, you know, the one of the best characters. So they, like, even to the very last episode, the very last minute, they took something away from you when you thought it was all over and now you could breathe. And then they were like, nope, we're going to take away your favorite stuff. But it was such a great show. And this is reading, knowing how the comics work out, I kind of expect that from this. And that's what they've given us so far. I mean, up until episode 3, you are strongly behind Stormfront. And Starlight is hero worshipping her. She thinks, like, that's who I want to be. And they're like this, well, they should be, I think they're about the same age in this, but there's some hero worship and it's getting Starlight out of her shell. But then you see, well, nope, she's exactly like Homelander. And in the comic book, that makes a lot more sense, you know.
Yeah.
But
Stormfront, you know, Stormfront's a character that when they said that she was going to be in it, or well, when they said Stormfront was going to be in it, we didn't know that they were going to gender swap, and then they cast Aya Cash. When they said that, I was like, oh god, like, this show's gonna, like, they're turning it up to 11.
Yeah.
Because for those of you who don't know about the comics, Stormfront is introduced as a Shazam and Thor like character with a swastika on his cape. He's a former Nazi superhero, and he was one of Hitler's right hand men. So when you bring in this, you're knowing that, like, this is a hero who has committed war crimes and genocide, and now you're throwing them into this show. And when you meet Stormfront, she's edgy. She's very Portland. She's very grunge. She comes in here and she's holding people accountable and saying that, you know, why does the future have to be female when, like, why can't we just all admit that we're all the same person? You know what I mean? So she's progressive. And there is hero worship between Starlight and Stormfront. And it's very weird because in episode 3, Stormfront says, you know, I used to look up to you. Like, you were what I looked up to. And Starlight's saying, well, you know, I believe you and I agree with what you're saying. It sucks that they're doing this. And, like, Starlight has had the toughest time since joining the Seven. We know what she did with the Deep. In the comics, it's much worse. Then she goes into, you know, she has to go to the Christian camps and she realizes that that's a fraud. That's a joke. Then they sex her up a little bit. And now she's like, sexed to the max because she's doing, like, I don't know, like Victoria's Secret ads, and like she's got her own perfume, and they're like, they're really trying to, you know, capitalize on the sex symbol. But to your point about Stormfront, and to your point about like happy moments, I thought we were gonna have a moment with Mouse and Kimiko, where you're like, right. Oh my god, a reunion, they're together, and you know, Yep. Then they see each other in the store.
Another good one, and,
and Mouse decimates the Halloween store, and I'm like, oh no, Frenchie's gonna die. Like, they're gonna kill off Frenchie. And because, you know, there's the love aspect there between Kimiko and Frenchie, and that doesn't happen. And then Stormfront is chasing them through the city, and they're going through an apartment complex, and you think that she's gonna kill Kimiko, aka the woman, and Mouse comes and saves her, and you're like, oh, this is where Stormfront's gonna get her justice. And nope, hand's broken off. Yeah. And then Stormfront, as racist as she is in the comics, reveals herself and reveals her hand.
Yeah. Just a little tiny. We do see that racism. And I know they're going to dive in. They're going to be happily. They're going to go right into it because that is something they'll be all right with. Mm-hmm. And she seems a lot younger, and she's an older version of the serum, or right around the same time as Homelander in the comics, right? Like, well, where they were created close to the same time, right?
Maybe earlier, because it was, yeah. Soldier Boy was the first super in World War II, in World War I and World War II, and then we got Stormfront in the Nazi regime. And speaking of Soldier Boy, he's already cast. He's coming season 3. Jensen Ackles from Supernatural. And they already name dropped Soldier Boy too. So there's a little foreshadowing into the future there.
Right. Yeah. So it's interesting how she represents the younger generation of heroes. And but there's also this little, in season 3, which is her big episode, Stormfront's, we see her playing the game a little bit, you know, talking to, when she's, you know, talking out every side of her mouth. You know, she says something to, what's her name?
Starlight.
And then she has a whole different attitude when she's talking to Stormlander. So we'll see how this works out. It's great storytelling, because, like I said, even though we kind of know who she is as a character, we don't really know how she's being presented or represented. And there's a few other things that haven't been. I'm not going to spoil a couple of the other characters that haven't, you know, their stories haven't been told yet. But I expect them to be. I wonder, are they going to tell the story that we know, like the origins of some of the people that we've seen before? But we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of what ifs in this series. The one what if for me is it's not even a what if, but is Stormfront the death of Homelander? Because at the end, she's like, well, you missed your mark. You snooze, you lose, Gramps. So she's shown, like, the writing's on the wall for Homelander. He knows that Vault doesn't care about him. They brought in Stormfront to rival his place at the Seven. So is he going to go off the deep end and reveal his hand, or are they going to have Stormfront kill him?
Yeah, I don't. And that's the thing, is the more he cares about his son, the more they have something they could hold over him. That's something they can control him with. That's why I think they want to, more than they care. They absolutely, Vault doesn't care about anything except for money. So I think that's why they take care of his son, and they want him to have a relationship with him, is so they could eventually hold it over him and use that to control him at some point. But we'll say, I really don't know. I don't, and is she as powerful? Because in the comic books, Stormfront's almost as powerful as he is.
Yep. It's very Shazam and Superman.
Yeah. So it could go either way, and it will just, well, you know. I'd like to think Starfront's almost as powerful. That would be a neat storyline, but we'll see. I don't know. It's not. Yeah. It's not about who's got, like, it. It is really about power plays and turning each other against, or turning. You hope Stormfront and Homelander eventually kill each other, as a watcher. You know, they've made you want to do that, but you're also like rooting. Like, I do like, as a character, or you know, as somebody to watch on TV, I do like Storm or Homelander. I like Butcher. Butcher, I'd like too, but Butcher's a mess in his own different way. So,
yeah, you kind of want Huey to kill Butcher.
Yeah, but Huey's having a breakdown.
Yeah, Huey's not going to do anything. He keeps thinking he's living a Billy Joel song, where he's going to jump off the bridge. Last point about Stormfront. The reason why I think she's going to kill Homelander is because the tone of where they're, like, when they did the press junket. And it was like, can you say the, you know, females kick ass or whatever? I think they're trying to do the Seven as a female-led group. It's like if the Spice Girls were superheroes.
Yeah. I don't know. It is weird because it is like turning feminism on its head. And it's very current to situations that we have going on now. And the fight that everybody's putting up to have their say and to be heard. And this is kind of like a counter to it. Like, look, I could talk to myself. I could do whatever I don't need you to put words and speak for me. So we'll see. I think she'll get the okay to control Homelander at some point.
I think the green light's already on Homelander's head.
Yeah.
I think that they're, because
she popped out of nowhere. Yeah.
Yeah. And like he was usually, he signs off on Starlight, he signs off on Translucent and all these other characters. And he didn't get to sign off on her. They brought in Daredevil for a second, Blindspot, who awesome character. I thought he was really cool, and then they, you know, boxed his ears and he's dead laying on the ground. This show's bringing in some new characters. We saw Eagle, a play on Green Arrow, and Hawkeye, who is kind of recruiting the Deep to join a cult, join the church.
Very Scientology-ish.
Yeah, and then we're going to get Lamplighter, who is played by Sean Ashmore. He's like the original member of the Seven. He's the reason why Starlight has left or isn't in the Seven, because he retired.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to do a little foreshadowing here. Do you think that the CIA's informant on the Supes that Butcher has to contact is Lamplighter? And he's actually going to help take down the Seven, and he retired because he knew the writing was on the wall.
We'll see. I mean, he's not. It's hard. This is what's good about it. It's hard to, like, this is weird, but this is like the Kelvin scale. Kelvin doesn't go into the positives. It starts at zero and goes into the negatives, and that's how these guys are. Like, there's no good guy. Like, Maeve is close, but Maeve has done some horrible shit, too. Like, so you can't get behind somebody and go, what would they do as a human? Like, Lamplighter's not a good guy in the comic books either. He's a horrible, but that doesn't mean that he can't do something good for his overall benefit and to take advantage of that. So I don't know. It's something that could happen. They're very confident that they could figure something out. I don't know what his powers are in this. So, but who knows? Yeah. I mean, that seems pretty reasonable actually. So it doesn't seem too out of place.
Yeah.
For, what's going on here?
What do you think about the evolution in the Deep storyline?
You are becoming sympathetic to Patton Oswalt's skills. And I hope they stick around for, I don't know how long he's going to be playing the gills, but they did a great job of in the third episode when he brings the, what's his, the Susie or whatever the whale's name is.
Yeah.
And, you know, Homelander's like, cover up your gills, it's gross. So, like, it's all reoccurring, and something's going to happen with the deep.
Do you think it's good or bad?
It's along to, if in the end he rehabilitates himself by sacrificing himself, it'll be good. But he shouldn't get any rehabilitation in any way. He's got to, you know, now that he's on that, in the cult and everything else, he's interesting. He's more interesting now than he yep. was before. I think he's breaking out as one of the better characters now than he did in season one. So he's coming along, and I like what he's doing. So
I think he's going to sacrifice himself for Starlight if after A-Train tries to kill her.
Yeah.
Because his A-Train's days are numbered. His heart's going to explode, or he's relapsing. Yeah, hopefully, like, he's one of the most unlikable characters, and Jesse T. Usher plays him phenomenally. A lot of people don't like the Flash, but he's the Flash. You know, A-Train is the Flash, but he's just living that privileged superhero life. But he says, like, he has a very important moment. He goes, when he's in Starlight's penthouse, and he's like, you know what? You say that nothing's wrong. What could be what could be more than having superpowers? That's somebody with money saying that. You don't know what it's like to not have anything. So he's right. Just – A-Train is kind of like a basketball player who gets a ton of money but no Allen guidance. Iverson. Yeah.
Right.
He gets no guidance, so he goes out there, and all of his family comes out of the woodworking. All of his friends take advantage of him. Yeah. He makes really
he's
bad
investments.
He's got
the entourage that goes everywhere he goes. He brought Prince's guitar.
Yeah, and like he's gotta make these crazy outlandish purchases because that's the life that people expect from him. And he's struggling with some stuff too. He killed his girlfriend, so like you said, everybody's got this blood on their hands, and now Starlight has blood on her hands because everybody who dies going forward in regards to the leak is on her.
Right.
So she's, you know, nobody's good in this. Nobody's clean. Not one person is clean. And I like it that way. I like that they all have something to lose.
And as other people like Huey start he's falling apart quicker and quicker and quicker. The more he sees people get killed, like you saw that, what's her name, the CIA agent, just get trashed. And the more people like, get shot in the head in front of him, he loses something. He gets closer and closer to just losing his mind. Whereas Starlight is, she's becoming a player. Everything gets easier and easier for her. I think we're supposed to look at her like, oh, she struggles through all this, but not really. Like, she's making choices faster and faster, and she's, especially her communications with A-Train, she's better at this than she was before.
She flipped on him quick.
Yeah. Yeah, real quick. And yeah, to a point where now he's one of, not a lackey, because doesn't do anything for her, but, you know, there's nothing that... This got very into Game of Thrones territory of players, game players, real quick. You know, two seasons, we're already seeing factions and factions and players and people turning their backs on each other. So it's getting better. It's getting a lot better. Well, it's not getting better. It's been good this whole entire time. It hasn't really changed for me. This has always been great. And it's kind of staying that way. But, it's fun to see everybody, you know, their reactions to everything that happens. And these actors are doing a great job, you know, portraying, you know, the shatterings of their mind and putting the pieces back together.
Yeah, and for most of these actors and actresses, they're not A-listers to a lot of people. They may not know who Aaron Moriarty is or who Anthony Starr was. Jesse T. Usher, Jack Quaid. A lot of people didn't even know he was Dennis Quaid's son. So, you know, you're bringing in a very, very fresh cast. You have Laz Alonso, who is an established actor, who seems to get so much more jacked every episode. Like his biceps,
he got huge for this season.
Yeah, his biceps are enormous. And then you got Chase Crawford from Gossip Girl, I believe he was in Gossip Girl. But you also have like Karen Fukuhara, who really gets the short end of the stick in regards to lines, because she had zero lines in Suicide Squad as Katana, and she's got zero lines in this, but she's showing her range, and she's quite possibly one of the most likable characters on the show.
Yeah, well, in her and brother's conversations, you see a little bit, but it's hard to determine whether that was real or imagined, because it seems like he was caught up in a cult too. Caught up in his kidnapper's ideas. I don't know if that was some Stockholm syndrome or whatever, but he seemed to like think she was responsible, but she seemed to think he was responsible. So it's hard to see like if she has dirt on her hands or not. It's she might, which wouldn't be that crazy, but at least she regrets things, and at least she's trying to get out of it, and she would have been happy to run away and go away forever, but she was caught and brought back in, and now it looks like she could do quite a bit of damage, or
you know,
her and her brother could have at the time. So we'll see what she's capable of now that she has an enemy in this.
Yeah, and one of those enemies is a character who I think is poised for a big season two, and that's Black Noir. We started with him laying waste to who I thought was going to be the big bad of season two, the Middle Eastern supervillain, and within 30 seconds he was beheaded.
Do you think, and I don't want to give up anything,
you gotta tread lightly in this, I know where you're going,
do you think it's going to follow the same path as the comics?
I do, and I think they've set it up with some subtle hints, and I think in the very first episode, there was a little bit of behind the curtain after he got wounded a little bit.
Okay. When you see him burn up a little bit there, and you know, we do spoil everything here, but in the comics that was one of the best parts.
Yep.
It was huge fun to watch, and it really twisted you up. Like, it was really hard to get your head around it. So I won't give that away. It could be a lot of fun, and it could be a game changer for this whole series. So I don't know. That'll be fun to watch. Do you think it goes more than three seasons?
I do. So season one was like a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. Season two is a 98%. Season three was renewed before season two started.
Yeah.
Personally, I think so. Again,
well, like, I'm just saying stories wise.
I think they can, because
tell their story.
I think you and I have talked about this today because you and I spent most of the day together, and I have to tread lightly, but this is only a small. What we're seeing now is a very small portion of a 72-issue run of comics. So you're looking at what? What's that? 6 years?
Yeah.
That's 6 years of comics. It could go six seasons. It could dive back. Like, we could get a whole season of flashbacks. You know what I mean? Or a couple episodes of flashbacks, like, of the creation of these superheroes and what Vault was doing. We really don't get any origin episodes for any of these heroes.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. We could get a whole, you know, and it's not going to really. I mean, we as comic book fans, this is the one thing that goes across the board. We're more comfortable now than we ever have been with going back in time and creating a period piece, and they could easily do that and see how before anybody had any powers, because apparently there was a time, and we'll see what happens, and give us a really good half a season or something of all origins, and you know, how Homelander was created. We get like little tidbits of flashbacks, but not really enough to tell a story. I mean, we know that, you know, he was grown in the lab, but what about all these other people? And you hear like Maeve talk about being, you know, she was like basically going to the malls tour with Tiffany and stuff like that. And, you know, we see the Christian camps, and, but there's story there. There's a lot of story to be told. And you're right. Absolutely. Flashbacks would probably be a great one, like eight episode season of flashbacks telling stories and how they got there and stuff like that, and how they met and where the CERM and who his Vic is and all that stuff would be great.
Yeah, there. I think
that would be one of the better way to like have that.
I think it goes as long as, you know, Seth Rogen's interested in the topic. You know what I mean? He seems very passionate about this. Did you catch his cameo?
No.
He was interviewed about the Seven. He did like a brief. He was like on CNN or like late night show. He was on there.
Okay, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Now, you brought it up, but Patton Oswalt is playing the Deep Skills. Who would have been better, him or Seth Rogen?
It's got to be Patton Oswalt.
Could you imagine that laugh coming out of the gills?
Like that's Seth exactly Rogen's laugh. The first thing I heard when you said his name. I was like, all I hear is Seth Rogen doing the pot giggle.
Yep.
I was like, nope, got to be Patton Oswalt. He's perfect.
Oh, no. I want those gills to laugh all the time.
Just smoking weed constantly.
Yep.
What's going on?
Smoking kelp.
I will pick very few people over a Patton Oswalt in a comedic spot. Like, he's one of my all-time favorites. And you know, Seth Rogen's got tons of geek cred. He's a geek too, but so is Patton Oswalt.
Yeah.
But I like Patton Oswalt in this a lot better. I like Patton Oswalt as, you know, an actor and a performer more than Seth Rogen. So.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of both.
Yeah. As soon as it happened, I was like, that was a good choice.
Yeah, it was
making you, his existential, like, his ayahuasca trip. Patton Oswalt talking it from the gills was great.
And he's checking off like comic publishers, man. He was in Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He was in Happy, which is a Vertigo DC property, and now he's in Dynamite. So he's got the trifecta. He's got to just keep on going.
Yeah.
And he's about to be MODOK in the animated series for Hulu.
I wouldn't mind him being MODOK anywhere. Like, that's, we'll see. I mean, that's where he should be.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
he fits. We already seen him on S.H.I.E.L.D. So,
yeah, but you know, they can just mold his face. He was a clone, so maybe Hydra took his DNA, turned him into MODOK, or AIM turned him into MODOK. Who do you think in season two is poised for the biggest story?
I want to say the girl, but I'm not sure. I don't know. She has a, you know, she now has a revenge story, mm-hmm. that's going to keep her in the group, and you know, there's a lot more to her. You've seen, if we follow the power path, Stormfront's nearly as powerful in the comic, and we're assuming to some degree almost as powerful as Homelander in the TV show. Just by her bravado, she thinks she is, at least. And Mouse and her put up a really good fight, like real close. I mean, I know in the end Mouse lost, but you know, she might have learned something there. So she can maybe put up a fight against Stormfront. And Stormfront doesn't have to, I mean, she doesn't have to, she could die this season and that'd be, you know, a great arc. And that could send the whole team in an uproar, because they might lose two heroes in Homefront and Stormfront. So I really, I think that's she might come out on having the best story and paying most attention to her, but it's really hard to guess. So
yeah, you got a ton of characters who a lot of people are getting a good amount of limelight, and then there's someone who, and then you have Maeve, who's really just a back burner character at this moment. But you're seeing, you're seeing behind the curtain for Maeve. You're seeing the love. You're seeing her family life. You're seeing more of a human aspect. And now that she's going to find out that she was created and she's coming to terms with that, could you see the Queen Maeve leaving the Seven?
I think there's potential for Queen Maeve to try to leave, and maybe she's getting to maybe go away for a little bit and then make a return when she figures out everything that's happening, and we get like a team up of some sorts. Maybe she joins the other side against the heroes. But I don't think she's going to leave for good. And
no, neither do I.
I don't think. I think that she has. She could be. She could heroically sacrifice herself to save her girlfriend, or you know, her loved ones. But she's having. There's some redemption to her story, and just like the Deep is kind of redeeming himself or trying to. We're learning that like. You live Homelander's life. You live by Homelander's ethics and morals. No matter what you try to do, Homelander kind of brings you back into his world. So it's all a matter of like escaping his gravity and trying to do your own thing. So we'll see how that works out for everybody.
Yeah, I could see her. I could see her potentially killing Stormfront or killing Homelander, depending on you know what side of the fence she's playing that day. But I think that I'm still going with Black Noir, and that's because I know more about Black Noir, and I'm going to leave it at that. I think he's poised for the biggest arc of season two.
Yeah,
but I have a question. Of all the characters that I was hoping for season two, he hasn't even been dropped for season two or season three. Do you think we ever see Tech Knight? I just know it's like issue 3 or issue 4 when Tech Knight's introduced, and the banter between him and Butcher is amazing. So I want to see that play out on screen.
Yeah, I do. You know, anybody that Butcher could spend some time talking to would be cool. Like, you know, to have that, because he's the best. I mean, because the accent that he puts on, but he's the best conversationalist in all of this. So,
yeah,
it would be cool to see him. It's probably, I mean, like if we're saying it can go on for a while, and how he died, and it's gonna be weird.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers to Tech Knight.
They need to introduce what they're introducing a lot of that, you know, the darker aspects of his personality in other people. So I think we're going to see. I don't know. It's hard to say. He'd be cool to bring in maybe as two seasons after season three, maybe. I don't know. But they're not saying he's going to be in season three. So I don't know. I don't know how you play him and get him into it right now.
You cast Jeffrey Dean Morgan, and you let him and Carl Urban have 8 episodes of just dialogue.
Yeah.
Like them going at it on screen is like lip sync battle. Or like it's like a never-ending freestyle battle between those two.
Yeah. All right.
All right, so let's get out of here. What do you give the first 3 episodes?
Out of 5. 5 out of 5 for the first 3. I really can't think of anything that bring like it is I had expectations, and it's been better for each episode, and each episode's gotten better. So there's only one way to, like, you know, that's it. You can't. I can't think of anything to take, anywhere to dock this, anywhere to take some numbers out of this. It's just, it was pretty, it's really been good.
Yeah, I'm with you. 5 out of 5, and 5 more episodes, because there's only 8 this season.
Yeah.
But this is it. I'm going to echo what you said. I went in with a high bar for the season after season 1. This has shattered that bar and exceeded it. It continues to, like you said, get better, and it might be my favorite show on television. And that's, you know, Lucifer just came back, and I love Lucifer, but I think that this is near perfect for the content that they're trying to put out.
Yeah. Yeah. They haven't dropped the ball anywhere. This is the exact story they're trying to tell. And as a comic book movie or show that is based on material, they are walking a fine line, maintaining what we know and keeping us engaged, you know, because we're fans, but also giving us a little bit of different stuff, so we don't ever really know. We're not spoiled by the comics. Yep. They're changing enough where, you know, we're always wondering what's going to happen next. So,
yeah, they're keeping you on your toes and keeping it fresh, and I appreciate that. But yeah, that's it, man. That's our episode. 5 out of 5 for both of us, first 3 episodes. If you haven't watched The Boys, go watch The Boys. I think we did a good job spoiling the first 3 episodes. It's not for everybody. This is a series that may not be for everybody, like Tom said earlier in the show. If you're a happy-go-lucky MCU devotee and that's all you watch, this might not be for you, because this is suits and capes and cowls in a sense that they are characters in a show, but is way beyond superheroics. It's every man for themselves, and pretty much everybody is a villain in somebody else's eye. So go and watch it. We gave it a 5 out of 5. Next week, we might have watched Tenet, New Mutants.
We're going to try.
Yeah, New Mutants, Mulan.
We got a lot to watch.
Yeah, there's a lot of choices out there, but we'll be back with a movie review, and we'll post our upcoming episode on Friday on Twitter, which is The Grays, THEGRYS, of what we're going to talk about on our next episode. So follow us on social media, Galaxy Wars Podcast, wherever you can search for us. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already on all podcast directories, and support Active Geek every Wednesday. We are also going to be talking about The Boys a little bit on this upcoming Wednesday, me and Chuck. And we'll be back next week. So here's $20. Buy yourself something nice.